Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya, where we talk all about Lyme and beyond, because as most of us know, Lyme rarely travels alone. I created this podcast to offer you hope and to remind you that healing is possible, because I healed from my 13-year journey. Although it was exhausting physically, emotionally, financially, it truly was a blessing as it reshaped my mind, body, and soul. In this space, we share raw and real conversations with those who have made it to the other side of this journey, along with breaking down different topics and approaches with practitioners. My goal is to make you feel less alone, more empowered, and confident in being your own advocate. So thank you so much for tuning in today. And if you're looking for more tips and resources, I share everything I learned along my journey on my Lyme and Beyond with Tanya Facebook page. So I'm so excited for this episode because I think it is such a great way to kick off May, Lyme Disease Awareness Month. My guest today is Terri McCormick. Not only is she the mom of children that battled Lyme disease, she's also such a strong voice within the community. She is part of ILADS, she's part of LymeDisease.org. The list goes on, guys. So I'm excited to have her share all the things that she does, why she got involved. So we are going to break down a little bit of the journey of her children, along with what she does, where her mission is, and how it became. And then the biggest news of the whole episode is the hot topic, the new launch of her new book for the Lyme community. I don't know, maybe I should say for the chronic illness community. It is packed full of so much great information. So we're going to dive into what that's all about too. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into this. Terri, always great to see you. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to see you too, Tanya.
So where do you want to start, Terri? If we can just take maybe the first little section in. It kind of just dives into why you're even here, right? Like why you're involved in this community. So if you could just share a little bit about your children's journey and, maybe from their perspective as well as yours as a mom.
Well, my journey starts way back in 2004, and I had very young children at the time, and it was a beautiful May day, one of the very first nights, our first nice days of summer. And my kids came in just filled with ticks. And so we removed them. And in one of my daughter's hair, she has brown hair, dark hair. We missed one of the ticks. It was stuck in her scalp. And about 3 days later, we found it and tried to remove it. And you could literally see it like a splinter underneath of her skin. And we couldn't get to it, so we took her to the pediatrician, who said, "Don't worry about it. She'll absorb it into her body and eventually poop it out." He literally said that. So he said, "There's no Lyme disease in Illinois." The next year was the sickest year of her life. We were spent a lot of time in the hospital. She had every rash, every virus, everything you can imagine, and it was all kind of written off as, well, this is her first couple of years of school. She's developing her immune system. Everybody just kind of played it off. Nobody connected the dots that it could be connected to that tick. So for 10 years, two of my girls were misdiagnosed. We went to several different physicians. I live in the Chicagoland area, so I like to think we have some of the best health care in the whole United States. And we just went to specialist after specialist after specialist until we finally found 10 years later that it was Lyme disease. And that's kind of how my story starts.
And it was all from the tick that you should just leave in the scalp and let it absorb.
Yes. Now, I did have more than one child that ended up being diagnosed. It was two of my daughters, that my middle two daughters, and they were the ones that they both started. They had very different symptoms along the way, and that kind of made it confusing, even for me. Some of their symptoms overlapped, but some of them were very, very different. And so it kind of kept me running in circles as well. And the more I talk to specialists, and this is very common in the Lyme community, people are dismissed and made to feel like they're crazy. And people have heard this type of a story before. So, thankfully, we ended up finding somebody that did diagnose them and treat them.
Yeah, it really is. And I know that that was part of your kind of mission into writing the book, which we're going to get into later, because the misdiagnosis is it happens too often. And I can kind of understand it, right? Like Terry, you just explained, even as a mom, you're looking at both of your children who are completely reacting in different ways. So we get that it can be hard to diagnose. I think the biggest thing is that we have to quit being dismissed and gaslit. And I think that that's the biggest part in the community.
I do think so. And part of the problem too is my second daughter had very physical symptoms. She had migraines, and her knee was so swollen, and her hands were swollen twice the size that they should have been, with like really dry skin and sores all over. So she had all of these very physical symptoms, and everybody was starting to refer me to psychiatrists. And so that's where some of the gaslighting came in, because I started to get more and more angry, saying, "Wait, these are physical symptoms. Why are you sending me to a psychiatrist? We need to figure out what's causing these physical symptoms." And then they started writing probably in the charts about me as well. Mom's a little crazy, a little overbearing, that kind of thing. So that it's very
Send
common.
mom to the psychiatrist as well, right?
And my kids had lots, we went to lots of specialists. They had lots of misdiagnoses. So my third daughter was diagnosed with fibromyalgia at the age of 10, which is crazy, because at the age of 10, you should never have that. And then my second daughter, lupus and migraines, chronic migraines, and just different things, sinus problems. We went through all of it. The tonsils, they kind of went through all of it. And yeah, we weren't finding any answers. So after that happened, I started to lose faith, a little bit of faith in the allopathic community. We also went to a lot of ERs. I started asking a ton of questions. And as we all know, the standardized testing is very inadequate and does not reveal Lyme disease or even any indication in many cases. And it didn't with my children. So that's where everybody dropped it. They all said, "We've tested for Lyme disease and tick-borne illness, and she doesn't have it." And even though I would say, "But look, she's got all of these symptoms, all these symptoms are listed." And that's kind of just where they stopped. So until we found Dr. Christ, who I credit him with saving my kids' lives. He was a physician from Columbia, Missouri, and we drove over 6 hours to go see him. And he actually just passed away in January. So I have a little tribute to him in my book that I've written, because he literally was a great man. He was just, I
Oh,
can't
I
say
love
enough nice.
that.
Yeah, he was a
Yes,
great person.
he was the recent one. There was actually just three back to back, right? Just horrible losses for the community. Very sad. So I've heard, I've never met the man or nor had the opportunity to have him as a guest, but I've heard many great things about him. So a terrible loss for the community for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm assuming, can we just walk through, and we don't have to break them down child per child, but just some of the treatment options that you went with that worked for your children? Because, everybody's so different. One thing works for one and one doesn't work for another.
So it was 2004 when they were bit. 2005 is when they really first started with a lot of symptoms. And 2000, May 1st, 2015 is when they were diagnosed. So before I get into treatments, I'll just talk about what happened 10 days after they were diagnosed, in
Okay.
our long journey. So I have four children, and my son, who was 10 years old at the time, started with this crazy rash. It was Mother's Day. We were at church, and he had this rash, and it just really went from like his waist, and it looks very strange, like scratch marks almost. And it went from his waist all the way up to his neck. He was a little boy that used to run everywhere. So like he would run to the mailbox, he'd run to the baseball field, he'd run to see his friends, run off the bus, all that kind of thing. And all of a sudden he stopped running, and he, was laying down saying, "My heart hurts, my heart hurts." And so of course we find a tick on him, and having gone through that 10 years and misdiagnoses with my daughters, I was very worried. So I packed them up and said, we're going to the ER. I want them to properly remove this tick. I want to get it tested, send it off to be tested somewhere. I knew enough back then to say that. And I need to get some antibiotics for him. And so we went in with all of these symptoms. He also had some pain in his knees, but even I dismissed that as maybe a growing pain or something. He's a 10 boy. So we went in, and despite all of these symptoms, the ER docs gave him one pill of doxycycline, which is the IDSA guidelines in the state of Illinois because we're considered non-endemic. So I said, this seems wildly inappropriate. I know how, complex Lyme disease is and how it can spread. We need to take care of it right now. And they said, we need to take a wait and see approach. You don't build antibodies right away for these tests. So let's wait 8 weeks and let's see what happens and see, in 8 weeks what the tests say. Well, we didn't need 8 weeks because his personality changed drastically during that time. What I know now about this rash is that it was a Bartonella striae. It was a Bartonella rash that went all the way up his body and his neck. I think it might have been dismissed at the time as some kind of a weird stretch mark type of rash. They definitely did not take it seriously. And in that 8 weeks, like I said, his personality changed drastically. He started thinking, he became paranoid. He wouldn't go outside. He wouldn't go down to the to our basement, which was finished. He thought his family was against him. He started, as it progressed, he started with anger. And this little boy who was just like everybody's friend just thought everybody was against him. And one time I caught him at the baseball fields, and he was just swinging his bat over and over and over again against the backstop. And he was having a little episode of Lyme rage at that point. And it was really sad to see. So we waited the 8 weeks, but I got him in with Dr. Christ, and Dr. Christ didn't even, he just saw the pictures and said, I know exactly what this is. We're going to start treating him for Bartonella and other tick-borne illnesses. And so we started the treatment. So.
Wow, and that had to have just been just double heartbreaking for you, right? Like you watched what your daughters went through. Now you have all this education, all this information. You take it to these ER doctors, explain the severity of this, right? And they still don't. I mean, I get it. I get that they have guidelines. I get all of that, but something is just so messed up with that picture.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there are two sets of guidelines, and what I tell people now when I advocate for them is that there's the IDSA guidelines and then there's the ILADS guidelines. So if I am talking to a parent whose child has been bit by a tick, I typically send them the link to where the ILADS guidelines are. So ILADS is they set forth a whole different set of guidelines. It's typically 3 to 4 weeks of antibiotics after somebody's been bit. However, it does change person to person. And when parents are equipped with this information and they can go in now to the ERs or to their walk-in cares, they can typically get more than one pill of doxycycline. They can at least get maybe 10 days or 14 days of an antibiotic. And within that time frame, then I refer them to an ILADS doctor who can further evaluate them and decide if they need further antibiotics or whatever treatment plan they might need. So that's
Right.
one little tool. The other thing is, it is hard to get in with these doctors under acute, if you have an acute tick bite, you have a tick bite, you have a rash. It is very hard to get in with these doctors. So doing what you can to get that initial set of antibiotics so that you can have the time to get in with a specialist is really a good idea.
Right. Kind of be proactive, right? Instead of reactive. And I recently did an episode with Dr. Mariah Hinchey, and we kind of broke down from tick bite to where do you go, right? What do you do? And it was such a great episode because she, just like you did, Terry, laid out some guidelines. Like, this is what I recommend, right? Like, let's jump on something, let's figure it out, and just a really good roadmap for you. So
And Dr. Hume, she also has the Afterbite. Did she maybe she talked about that in her episode? So she has something, a supplement that you can purchase if you're in a very endemic area and you know you're going to get a lot of tick bites. People sometimes purchase this, and it's a mixture of herbs that helps you right after you have a tick bite.
Oh, okay. I don't think she mentioned that, but she did share kind of a little paste that she recommend with some angiographs and some other things in it to put directly on the bite. So yeah, it was really a step-by-step guideline episode, which was fabulous. So we
Love it.
all need all these tips, right? Because most of us don't know. We don't know. That's why we keep sharing our voices. So wow, so now you have three children, Terry, dealing with this.
And actually, so one of the nice things about having Dr. Chris as our physician at that time was the appointments were about 2.5 hours per child. So when we finally got JT, my youngest, into see Dr. Chris, he actually sat next to another gentleman who also had Bartonella, and he was in that waiting room for a long time, and he got to have this great conversation with this other gentleman who really helped my son understand what he was going through and really helped calm his nerves a little bit too, and that was wonderful. But the funny thing is, with all of this, so I have four children, and all four have Lyme disease. And were diagnosed. So as I was talking to Dr. Christ during one of our visits, I was just explaining to him that my 16-year-old was having all these increasing eye problems and that they were diagnosing her at school, or not diagnosing, but recommending that she see somebody for dyslexia, which I thought was very strange because when you're 16, you've already learned to read. Usually teachers catch dyslexia more like kindergarten, sometimes 4-year-old preschool, first grade. That, you know, that is
Right.
when they're learning to read. So why is she now being diagnosed at age 16? And he said to me, Terry, let's bring her in. Let's test her. That's, he said, one of the top symptoms for Lyme disease is symptoms with your eyes. She was also having a lot of black floaters, and her eyes weren't working really well together. So I tested her, and these were really all of her only symptoms. I tested her and she was CDC positive for Lyme disease. And she was the only one that I had that was CDC positive ever. And her immune system was just strong enough. So her immune system stayed on top of everything. She tested positive for, you know, the Lyme disease and the tick-borne illnesses. And then he treated her, he did treat her with doxycycline, which is a good, you know, I guess a good antibiotic for your brain and for your eyes. And it was a quick treatment. It, you know, it cleared up right away. And then it came back when she went to college, and he once again gave her a quick prescription and cleared up again. So it's strange how differently it's affected all four of my children, and they all have the same DNA. They all live in the same family, but yet their symptoms were so vastly different.
Right. And I think that symptom-wise, right, like that happens with everybody. We all react differently. But like you just touched on, your oldest daughter's her immune system was strong enough to fight, right? Like she had this strong foundation because so many of us live with this bacteria in our body and we don't even know it because we're healthy. We're good. Our body's able to fight it off. And then you have some type of trauma, whether it's physical or emotional, trauma is usually what shuts down the body and allows these pathogens to take over. And then all of a sudden you're sick. And yeah, you may have realized you got bit by a tick 10 years ago, but oftentimes you don't correlate it because it was so long ago, like what it maybe could have been, right? It lays dormant in so many of us for oftentimes many, many years.
It's a combination of a lot of different factors. It can be a combination of viruses, of mold, of parasites. I always say Lyme comes with friends. It's never just Borrelia, Lyme disease. It's always Lyme and three, you know, three to
That's why
four.
I say Lyme and beyond, right? Like it just goes beyond the vector-borne illness because we don't just get those and the co-infections, like you said, Terry, mold, you know, candida, parasites, Epstein-Barr, like just the list goes on of the things that usually we also get diagnosed with when we're dealing with this type of an
And
illness.
that's also a conversation I have a lot as an advocate. I always refer people to an ILADS doctor or a doctor that's specifically trained in the complexities of this illness, because there's not one thing that just fixes it. The doctor's got to be like a medical detective, needs to figure out what's going on, what's driving the symptoms, what is the mix, because each pathogen is treated differently with a different type of a treatment. So you really have to, you can't just blindly treat this. So
Yeah,
I
no,
always recommend,
there's
yeah,
many,
these doctors.
many layers to it. Many layers to it. Well, gosh, we almost need a full episode for each one of your children, right? So, gosh, but they're all thriving, they're doing well, and it truly has just kind of shifted your whole mission. I know that over the years you did so much research, right? You had to be the advocate of your children to figure out what is going on. Why are they being dismissed? This is not normal, right? And so talk about, share with the audience what it is that you do. I know that I had mentioned you're part of iLADS, you're part of LymeDisease.org, which, by the way, back years ago when I ran the nonprofit in my hometown, we did a lot of affiliate work together with LymeDisease.org. So they kind of have a big piece of my heart. So yeah, so share what you do in the community.
So from that point with my children, I became very fearful. I was fearful of the fact that there was pe most people in our community, in our medical community, that didn't recognize the chronic Lyme disease that they were facing. And I was also worried about their future. So I became like this voracious reader on everything Lyme that I could find. I started attending all the seminars I could. I started going to the iLAD seminars and just anything I could find. I just needed to know more information about Lyme disease and the co-infections. And that also led me to the Trinity School of Natural Health, where I took courses and became, I'm actually a board certified naturopath and board certified in Lyme studies as well. However, I do want to say that I am specifically an educator. I've never treated anybody. I'm not a healer. I would like to pass off people to the doctors that really understand. But I do enjoy learning, and I do enjoy breaking it down now for the community. And it was that fear that I had that kept me learning and kept me moving forward with everything Lyme. So that's kind of how I got associated with some of these other groups. I write now for LymeDisease.org, and I'm a writer, and I also do some graphic design work for them, and I really enjoy that. And then I volunteer for iLADS as an ambassador and help out where I can there. And then also for Center for Lyme Action, I'm the Illinois state lead. So,
I love it. You wear lots of hats. So,
yeah.
we'll just go backwards. So, Center for Lyme Action, for you listeners, is an organization that was put together 8 years ago, 7 years ago, because I've been part of it, and also the Idaho team lead for 6 or 7 years, and they started 1 year before I found them. But I've done a podcast episode on it. It is an organization that you, as a Lyme patient or a family member or supporter, can get involved in. And what it is it's trying to raise more money and funding for different categories revolving around vector-borne illness. So it's a fantastic organization that helps to raise government funding. So if you want to look into that, it's the Center for Lyme Action. Now, Terry, tell us a little bit about what exactly LymeDisease.org is, what type of resources listeners can get from there, as well as what iLADS is and what resources are available for them. Because a lot of people, believe it or not, right, aren't familiar with some of these resources.
Yeah, LymeDisease.org is great. They've been around for quite a long time, and they've published a lot of information. It's an advocacy organization, and they will publish just different articles about different things that are going on. So, like, I was just at the MAPS convention last week and wrote all about it with 600 new physicians that were there and interested in learning about chronic illness. So we do write about some of those different things. Another thing that they have is something called My Lyme Data, and that's a patient-driven, it's like patient-driven research. So you can sign up there and then go through a questionnaire, and they have different stats that they've put forward that's really been helpful in the Lyme disease community. So that's wonderful. And then with ILADS, I'm just an ambassador. So I help other people find doctors through ILADS. And I've worked on the ILADF fundraiser in the past, trying to raise money to educate more doctors in regards to the complexities of Lyme disease. So I think both of those organizations are wonderful. So,
They really are.
and I do want to say that I had a breaking point. And this is going back a little bit into the story, but I, with my second daughter, she was very, very ill. And there was one night that she always had these swollen hands, and you could see, she would always say, "My blood vessels hurt. My blood vessels hurt here. My blood vessels hurt in my hands." It was kind of a strange thing for a young girl to be saying. But one night she said, "Mom, my blood vessels in my hands are hurting so bad." And I watched as she started bruising from her fingertips. And it was moving up her hand, and she was crying out in pain. And I knew at that point I could not go to the ERs anymore because they were just going to refer to a psychiatrist. And I had this fear that it was going to go from her fingertips, and it's moving up her hand, and her hand's completely bruised all the way up her arm. And then I thought, is it going to go to her heart? And is blood vessels going to explode in her heart? And it was at that moment I hit my knees, and I prayed to God, and I just said, I need your help. I can't do this on my own." And I started bargaining with him, which maybe you're not supposed to do, but I was doing it at the time. I said, "Please, God, I will always be there for somebody else. Put them in my path. If you just open the right doors, help me help my children. I know you love my children and I love my children. Help me help my children. I can't do this alone." And then from that moment on, doors opened. That's when we started finding all of the right pathways for healing. And excuse me, it's funny. People started plopping in my laps too, that after we found out that we had Lyme disease, I would run into people everywhere that either had some type of a bullseye rash. I was sitting at the nail salon and I said, "Do you know what your rash is on your shoulder?" As I'm sitting next to this young woman, and I said, "You really probably need to go get that checked out. It looks like, an erythema migraines." And she said, "Thank you." She didn't know that it was a positive diagnosis of Lyme disease. And my neighbor, who moves in from New Jersey, and the doctor down the street, and just the people that I started advocating for. And I do feel like, maybe this path was laid out for me. And maybe this path was laid out for me because I'm not going to be quiet about it. And then I am going to stand up for people. And so I spent many years from 2017, and I still advocate for people, trying to help them find the right doctors and help them determine what's going on with their symptoms. And also, even after they start treatment, because it's so foreign. And it in the Lyme disease world, you either get it or you don't get it. And there's people out there still today that, will look at me like I'm crazy, but my kids have healed. So I know I took the right path. And there's still people that will disagree. So I have made it my mission to be an advocate, and I think that's very similar to you, Tanya. You and I share that in common. It was very our experiences from before were very traumatic, and that's what's led us to do what we do.
Absolutely. And it truly is. Like, God needed to use me to go through this journey personally. He needed to use you to be the advocate and the cheerleader for your children to put us exactly where we need to be. And we do this from the goodness and the mission of our heart, which is where we've been led to do. And so I appreciate you for that reason amongst many others, because we truly need voices like you and I. We're really loud. We don't shut up much, right?
Right.
We need voices like this in this community. And we do become a little maniac, right? Like you in the nail salon. You saw somebody with that. We point it out. We say it. I don't care. I may never see that person again. If they think I'm crazy, that's okay. But if they take my advice and get an actual diagnosis and get help, that was my only goal, right? So
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't unsee it once once you know about Lyme disease and the tick-borne illnesses that go along with it. You can't stay quiet, and you can't, it's just part of who I am now. So I'm part of who I will always be.
And it was what brought us together to become friends.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I
Yeah.
love it. All right, Terry. So let's talk about the most exciting news. Congratulations. I am so proud of you. I'm so happy that your book is launching. I mean, hot off the press. And I know that just everything you shared in just this short bit is the reason you wrote this book, right? There's so
That was my
many
first
issues with what goes on in this community, and you really try to break them all down in your book using other people's stories. So, first of all, let's start off with what is your book called?
So this is my book. I don't know if it's, oops, maybe it's not going to be, it's going to be a little blurry, but it's called Being Misdiagnosed: Stories That Reveal the Hidden Epidemic of Lyme Disease. And just through my advocacy work, I was always running into people with different chronic illnesses and things that would have some symptoms that were very similar for tick-borne illness. And I would refer them, to an eyelids doctor or a doctor trained and specifically in tick-borne illnesses, and they would find out that their driver of their symptoms was infectious, and it was Borrelia, Bartonella, or Babesia, one of the co-infections. And this became more and more prevalent to me over the years. And so what I wanted to do was, Lyme disease is known as the great imitator. I think doctors have been saying that for years. It is a spirochete, and it is very similar to what syphilis did back in 1913, where it can really drive itself into many different parts of your body and cause massive inflammation within your body. And so what I wanted to do was write a book and find all these different disease states of people and their journeys, and then their journeys back to good health when they found out that it was Lyme disease. So I've got 12 stories in my book, and all of them are basically the same. They have found out they started with a diagnosis, with a different diagnosis, and then they found out that Lyme disease was driving their symptoms. So, for instance, I have a chapter on ALS, and this woman was given 3 to 5 years to live. She was diagnosed in two different places, and her daughter was very passionate about the fact that she didn't want to lose her mom because ALS is really a death sentence. And she looked for other avenues that it could be, and found a doctor who found that she had a tick-borne illness. And so, this is about 6 and a half years later, and she's still living. She doesn't have a wheelchair. She's reversed a lot of her symptoms. She found out that she had a tick-borne illness. So that's one of the stories in the book. And I cover a lot of different illnesses. So we have somebody with Parkinson's, psychiatric disease, Alzheimer's, MS, lupus, connective tissue disorder, lots of sleep issues, even like stomach issues like Crohn's and gut issues can be related to Lyme disease and tick-borne illnesses. So I put all those different stories and those different diagnoses in the book. I wanted to tell their story. And then also because I have had this experience in the Lyme community that there are people that get it and there's people that don't get it. So I wanted to weave in a little bit of the science and explain what was going on in the stories. And because there is a lot of research that's been done on Lyme disease, and there's still just not a lot of people in these specialty fields that are looking for an infectious driver like Borrelia. Yeah.
I love that. So it kind of sounds like a little bit of my podcast, right? Like I bring these success stories,
Yeah.
but I love how you diversified it, because that is a huge part of the problem in this community is the misdiagnosis. And then when you get diagnosed, I mean, we all lose hope along this journey, but when you get diagnosed with truly a hopeless diagnosis as ALS. If you don't have hope, I mean, what do we have, right? And there's so many people that are battling what they think is a hopeless illness when really it's Lyme disease. So I love how you are bringing in all these different stories from different worlds or different fields or different diagnoses to come together to be able to share their pieces of their journey. What an incredible idea that you came up with.
And my hope with this is that if somebody does have a chronic illness and they've never looked into Lyme disease, or maybe they have looked into Lyme disease, but the testing is not always very accurate. And I do talk about that in the first chapter of the book. But my hope is with this book that these stories are going to resonate with somebody and help other people so that they can also find a way to be healed. So if you can find the right doctors that can identify it, a lot of times there is a path to healing, many times.
100%. And I think that this book needs to be on everyone's coffee table, right? Because we read it, we hear these stories oftentimes, especially to people outside this world, right? Right. Maybe somebody new that's within this Lyme community, they read this story and to them, it's just mind-blowing. Like, how is this possible? Well, you and I, we see it every day, right? But for somebody to come in and really have their eyes opened about something like this, and then to discover, hey, maybe we need to look into Lyme disease. These are the conversations that you have at dinner or the nail salon. You overhear someone, hey, I read in this book that, right? We don't have answers to everything, but information is powerful. And if we all have a little bit and we all share our voice, it's at least enough to start some action, right? Let them maybe venture out and see if something else is going on with them. So I truly think it's just a brilliant idea for a book. So, all right, so you've got 12 stories in here. They each share kind of their journey. And then I know you had mentioned in the beginning. So what else do you have in this? You had talked about some of the things that were at the beginning of your book. So what else might a reader find in there?
So at the beginning of the book, it just talks about why there's so many reasons why Lyme disease is hard to diagnose, and why one is testing, one is lack of awareness. And since it is Lyme Disease Awareness Month right now, it is important to say that the ticks are out there, and that treating an acute tick bite is, if you get a bite, you should treat it right away. Don't let it go chronic, because once it's disseminated into your body, it's much harder to treat, and you can be much more successful treating it right away. So always take a tick bite seriously. And if you have an erythema migraine, then that is a positive diagnosis always of Lyme disease, and you should receive treatment.
And what is that? That is not English terminology, Terry.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
So an erythema migraines is a rash that grows over time, and it goes to about 5 centimeters, and it can look like a bullseye rash. Bullseye is like one of the terms, but it doesn't always look like a bullseye rash. It can be solid color the whole way. It really is something that's growing. If you have any type of a rash after a tick bite, just go get it checked out, because that is very important. But the erythema
And
migraine.
so that is part of the problem that you're describing as well, is that, we know if we get a bullseye rash, the circle with the dot in the middle, right? That automatically you are infected. But we're also talking about a different type of rash, maybe that spreads more, that doesn't really look like a bullseye rash. And then we even go into the Bartonella rash, the stretch marks, that all the things, and that's what you're bringing awareness to, right?
And one of the crazy things is that Bartonella striae is, it looks like stretch marks. And even in like our associations, our dermatology associations, they do not recognize Bartonella striae. So it is most commonly misdiagnosed or overlooked and thought of stretch marks. So, that is a problem. Anybody that has these Bartonella striae and any kind of psychiatric illness needs to be evaluated for Bartonella, just because they do go hand in hand. Bartonella can cross the blood-brain barrier, cause massive inflammation in the brain, cause anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, bipolar, so many different things. And that's being overlooked. That is definitely overlooked. And, one of the doctors in the book said that since 1913, we've known what syphilis can do. But we have not moved forward with some of these modern day bacteriums like Bartonella, and we are not testing for those, and we should be. We really should be.
Yeah, and it is, like you mentioned earlier with your oldest daughter who just had some eye issues. Like she's healthy, she's good. And the problem that we see so much is that these younger children, right, they're having some, maybe some attention issues in school or some outbursts or, and then they're automatically just medicated for ADD or, many of the different labels that we get, but we've got to get the word out there that the first direction you should go, right, is to look into one of these vector-borne illnesses because
Absolutely.
more than likely it's probably that, not all these kids should have issues, you
No,
know?
we have such a growing problem with suicide, with ADHD, with OCD, all of these different issues. And in addition to that, our tick-borne population is growing. And almost 500,000 people every year are newly diagnosed with tick-borne illnesses. So I, in my opinion, that's a connection. There's a connection with that,
Hundred percent.
that we
Yeah.
should be looking more into. The last chapter of my book is about a little boy, a really courageous little boy named Roman, and he started in school with being diagnosed with like ADHD, and then it moved to tics, and then they thought he had Tourette's, and then they thought he had epilepsy. He went to 7 major hospitals, and they found out that it was tick-borne illness. It was Bartonella, and it had caused some massive inflammation in his brain. And then they comboed that with he had some metabolic issues as well, so he wasn't detoxing very well. And he had a syndrome that's called PANS, where there's just his personality changed completely. And at his worst, he was at his best, he was a very, very smart little young man, had lots of friends, and just a normal little boy that was in school. At his worst, he was sucking his fingers and he was drooling and he had OCD-like behaviors. And 7 different major hospitals did not recognize what was going on, that there was an infectious driver, until finally they got in touch with another doctor who helped them find their way. He's on his way to
Classic.
recovery too. So that is an interesting and very sad story in the book. And another story is chapter 7. We were talking about rashes, and this was a young lady who went to University of Chicago, which is a very hard school to get into. And she was on scholarship there, and a very smart, also very smart and driven young woman. And she got a bullseye rash, and it actually looks like a bullseye rash. And she didn't know what it was, so she was Googling it. She was 19 years old at the time. She got some cream, it didn't work. So she went to the family doc or to the doctor in downtown Chicago, and they said, go to a dermatologist. The dermatologist said, it's nothing, don't worry about it. She left that dermatologist and went to another dermatologist a couple weeks later because the rash was still there. And then went to a third dermatologist in her hometown of Denver. And all three of these dermatologists dismissed this rash, but it's a bullseye rash. It's a classic bullseye rash. So it was not recognized for some reason. And the fact that it was there for that long, it was there for almost 3 months, also signifies that it was an erythema migraine. But what happened to this poor young girl is she started with the rash, and then she went into different sleep disorders and couldn't sleep, couldn't stay awake, and then also went into psychiatric illness. So unfortunately, she did try to commit suicide as well, but thankfully she was not successful, and she's doing well today and found a great doctor in Denver who's helped her with her Lyme disease, her mold illness, and she still has something called mast cell activation syndrome. So she still suffers from that, but she's still fighting, and she's remarkable, and she's so smart. And but this poor girl, all because a rash was missed, her life was drastically changed. She's also going to be like you and I, Tanya. She's going to join the advocacy world, and she wants her voice to be heard.
I
So.
love it. Bless her for sharing her story. And it can be as simple as that because I, for one, am one of the few that actually got a full-on bullseye rash. There was no denying what this rash was. I didn't know what it meant. So if I only had the education of what is a bullseye rash, same thing with this young lady you're talking about. If we just had that much education, we could know where to go, right? We could still have gone down many rabbit holes, but at least we had that bullseye rash, but we weren't educated. So I'm looking forward to her joining the forces with us, Terry, because the more we share, the more if only one person learns what a bullseye rash means, it's like my job's done. You know, it's just so important to get some of the simple information out there.
It's always a positive diagnosis of Lyme disease and always requires treatment. Never ever ignore any type of a rash, but never especially ignore a bullseye rash.
A 1,000,000%. There's no denying, right? Now, we could pull a tick off of ourselves and never get a rash, may or may not get sick. That doesn't mean that that tick, maybe the tick just wasn't infected with anything, right? But when you have that rash, 1,000,000%, you are infected. So don't
Absolutely.
hesitate. Don't hesitate.
Yeah.
Well, Terry, I am so excited to get my hands on your book. This is so exciting, and what a great time for it to come out and launch, just in time for Lyme Disease Awareness Month, right? Because it truly is. I mean, you and I and many in the community, we talk about this year round, but I think we shout a little bit louder during the month of May because we get recognized for 1 month for where we feel like people have to listen to us. So it's great timing. I'm excited. And listeners, we're going to have the books, everything that we talked about will be in the description of this episode. Terry, this has been great. Again, congratulations on your book. And
Thank you
is
so
there any last tip or last thing that you want to share with the listeners? And also, can people reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And also just one last thing in the very last chapter of my book, last two chapters actually, I do have an overview of different treatments that different doctors have done for Lyme disease and tick-borne illness. I talk about antibiotics and then also different adjunct therapies like SOT and just I have a hyperthermia. I have a whole list of different things that are in here because as an advocate, people are always asking me, I'm just not quite there yet. How do I get better? How do I get better? So because I do always go to the MAPS conferences and the ILADS conferences, I've collected a lot of information and just given a basic overview. And if you do have chronic Lyme disease, you know, this is a great opportunity for you to look and then maybe talk to your doctor about if there's something that you wanted to treat or something that you wanted to try. So,
Absolutely. And there's so many ways to treat out there, right? That we've never even heard of. So what a great addition to add into your book. Just a list of, it's all about sharing resources, right? And then you take these resources, talk to your practitioner, and you guys come up with a game plan together. So that's an amazing addition to your book.
And then the very, very last chapter is all resources. So, like, I have a list of podcasts, like yours is it here, Tanya, and some different physicians.
Oh, thank you. Oh,
I couldn't miss yours.
I
And
appreciate that.
different places where you can get financial resources, or you can look for different herbal companies, things like that. So there's just a great source of information at the very back of the book too. And I guess one of the last things that I do want to say to your listeners is that if you're living with like chronic illness and feel dismissed, misunderstood, or out of options, I encourage you to find a doctor who can explore whether you have an underlying infection and that may be contributing to your symptoms. And also, I want to say that if you need help with that, if you need help finding a doctor, if you have a chronic illness, please reach out to me and you can reach out to me at terrymccormick.com. I'm always happy to help and always try happy to help find resources or help find a knowledgeable physician to share to help you with your journey to better health.
Perfectly said. Terry, truly thank you for everything you do in the community. Thank you for bringing this, what sounds like a fantastic book to this community and just all that you do to help offer hope, right? I mean, the bottom line is just we need to have hope if we're going to heal. So I
Yeah.
appreciate you joining me and sharing everything.
And thank you so much, Tanya. And I thank you for everything that you do too. And we're all in this together.